Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. We are visiting for a full hour, I'm very pleased to say, with Bill Warner. Dr. Warner is a PhD in physics, of all things, but a self-taught and extraordinarily proficient expert now on matters involving, I believe, the central challenge of our time in this war for the free world, and that is the effort that is believed by many of the Muslim faith, not all, but many of the Muslim faith, to be a God-directed obligation to force all the rest of us to submit to this totalitarian political, military, legal doctrine they call Sharia. I was very heartened, Bill, that the president included that term in his just-revealed national security strategy. And I wanted to just come back to something that you mentioned was a form of jihad that is very dangerous and almost entirely happening unattended by our political class, that is to say, ignored or at least not taken as the threat that it is, namely a kind of financial jihad. Tell us about this term zakat and what it means and what it's about.
The zakat is one of the five pillars. It's the so-called charity tax. And the charity tax, the Quran lays out what's to be done with it. And we, Frank, you and I, are included in the charity tax. Did you know that? Because part of the charity tax is to go to those who fight in Allah's cause. That is, part of the tax on Muslims is to support violent jihad as a whole.
So, yeah, I've been told, Bill, that just on this point, that there are eight different purposes towards which zakat can be applied, and that at least one, and by some counts as many as four, involve that violent kind of jihad. Is that right?
This is quite correct. Because here's the thing. If Islam were a religion, you and I wouldn't be having this phone conversation. Islam is a complete civilization. There is nothing we can do, from how we go to the bathroom, to the clothes we wear, to the food we eat, that is not dictated by Islam. Islam is a complete civilization. So therefore, when they come into our country, they start attacking us along civilizational lines. It may be as simple as, we don't want a Christmas tree where it can be seen if we're going to use the room. But any time that Muslims are there, we find that we have to do things their way. And doing them their way is part of civilizational jihad.
Yeah. Well, and I want to, as I say, drill down on that because this is really the crux of it. But before we leave zakat, Bill, it's my understanding that it's not really tithing so much in the sort of Christian or Jewish tradition as it is an obligatory tax on Muslims. Is that right? And again, to the extent that there are Muslims who are all in on Sharia, I assume that they are fulfilling faithfully their duty to pay that tax. When you talk with some Muslims, particularly here in the United States and elsewhere in the West, it's clear that they're not into Sharia. They're not practicing it. They're not interested in living under it. They don't want to force the rest of us to submit to it. Are they likely to be paying this zakat tax, even though they're not into it in that way?
Well, we don't know how much of the Islam they practice. The concept of Muslim is very peculiar. For some reason or other, everyone assumes that a Muslim is fully amped up on the entire doctrine and what's to be done and not done. I find that aside from the simple five pillars, that they're not really that interested in detail of the Islamic doctrine and just sort of blow it off and don't follow it. But so a Muslim, we don't know how much of Islam they practice. But the more they practice, the more they become kin to Al-Qaeda or the Muslim Brotherhood. So this is one of the secrets when we deal with a Muslim. We don't know how much of his doctrine he buys into, but we need to ask him.
Yeah, we need to be extracting that from him. I mentioned the term taqiyya previously, Bill, and you might help us understand what that's about and how widely it's practiced, and how does that affect our ability to understand, really, what people believe and stand for?
Well, taqiyya, there are several forms of deception in Islam. Islam is very peculiar in that it has a deception doctrine. As a matter of fact, there's a verse in the Quran which refers to the Jews, and Allah says, the Jews think they're deceiving me, but I am the greatest of deceivers. Now, Frank, what did I just tell you? I mean, when I read that verse, I was stunned. that I am the greatest of deceivers. So here we have a dualistic ethical system in which Muslims are supposed to tell the truth to each other, but the kafir, the non-Muslim, they can lie to. There's a famous hadith when Muhammad says, "Who will kill Ashraf, who has offended Allah and his prophet?" "I will, Muhammad, but I will need to deceive him. Do I have your permission?" "Yes, deceive him." That is sunnah by the perfect man, the perfect Muslim. So deception is referred to many times in Islam, and so therefore there are technical forms of deception, and one of those is taqiyya, sacred lies.
Meaning, it basically advancing the faith. If you're required to lie to do that, you're good to go. Is that right?
Yes. Whatever advances the faith is good and is moral, even if it's a lie.
Bill, let me ask you in this regard. You just mentioned that it's okay to deceive the kufr, the non-believer, the infidel, but not Muslims. It seems as though the Quran is actually a bit more tolerant of treating Muslims badly as well. Indeed, it's often pointed out that the jihadists of the violent kind have killed a lot more Muslims than non-Muslims. But is it also the case, Bill, that they have an ability to do that in the furtherance of the faith without any penalty or finding themselves afoul of the teachings of Muhammad? And would it not follow from that that they're certainly free to deceive them as well if it advances their purposes too?
Well, now we get into the question of how much Islam does a Muslim practice, and is it the right Islam? There's another form of jihad, which we haven't mentioned yet. It's what I call the jihad of purification. That is, it's part of the civil war of Islam. After Muhammad died, Abu Bakr became caliph, ruler of all of Islam. And there were many Muslims who decided, "We're going to leave Islam." But Abu Bakr said, "No, you're not leaving Islam. Apostasy is death." And so he killed several thousand Muslims who wanted to leave Islam. And then the remainder of them said, "You know, on contemplation, we like Islam a lot, and we're going to remain Muslim." He was purifying Islam. This is part of the Sunnah. So wars fought by Islam to purify Islam are part of the standard business of Islam. If the whole world became pure Islam, it would be in a constant state of war because one set of Muslims would be attacking another set of Muslims because they weren't practicing the real Islam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a very interesting video at the moment by Mordecai Cutter, I think it is. I can't remember his last name at the moment. Bill, I don't know if you've seen it. He and David Yerushalmi did a marvelous study of mosques in America a few years back. And anyway, he's on one of the Al Jazeera, I think, one of the Arab programs, really laying into them about the fact that, you know, you keep denouncing the Israelis and saying that, you know, the president moving the embassy of the United States to the capital of Israel, Jerusalem, is going to be a threat to peace. He said, "There's no peace in the Muslim world. You guys are killing each other all the time." So don't, it's, I guess, in the name of purification, right? But it's pretty messy business. And by the way, I just wanted to take note of the fact you mentioned Abu Bakr. Abu Bakr, of course, al-Baghdadi was the man who led the Islamic State in its glory days, and I guess is still doing so, though the caliphate has been diminished somewhat. But Bill, I do want to get to the very important points that I know you want to make, and I want to develop with you on this other kind of jihad that is practiced with great proficiency, including notably in this country, by the Muslim Brotherhood, a group that we know from at least reporting, we've not yet seen it, President Obama actually signed out a presidential study directive, it was numbered 11, for the purpose of essentially embracing, engaging, legitimating, and empowering the Muslim Brotherhood. Some say it was the go code for the Arab Spring. But we'll talk about what the Brotherhood is up to, including here in our own country, with a distinguished student of the subject and teacher of great, great clarity, Dr. Bill Warner of politicalislam.com, right after this.
to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.